welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour adventure, later on, a story from Mark Twain on the Cavalcade of America. But right now, it's John Steele, Adventurer. This part of the Mutual Broadcasting System's Thursday night lineup at 9:30, we hear a broadcast from December 14th of 1952 called 3-2.
This is John Steele, reporting on Adventure. I was going to title this yarn, Girl of the Golden West, but somebody else got there first with that label a long time ago. Anyway, the story takes place in the desert of Australia. It involves a redhead named Rosie, a guy who tried to double-cross her, $1 million in gold, and a dingo pack. I call this transcribed yarn 3-2. The middle of Australia represents one of the biggest and about the worst deserts on the face of this earth. In texture, it's something like the big salt flats of Utah. It was once a big inland sea. Right after gold was found in California back in 1848, it was also discovered in Australia, and they had their big bonanza just like ours. There's still a lot of gold there, and in parts of Western Australia, you'll still find wooden sidewalks, swinging doors, and miners in red shirts packing guns. I remember you had to duck real fast on a Saturday night when you heard 6 guns blazing. After World War II, a lot of our guys went back there to settle. A few more went back there to look for gold. But the gold is up there in that desert. You'd say it was no place for a girl, nor is it. But one gal went up there. She'd been raised in the state of Oregon, and the rugged desert of Australia didn't scare her. She went there with her husband, a guy named Panting, Leo Panting. They had a partner, a big fellow called Snowy. And when they found gold, Snowy had ideas.
Just like home.
Yeah?
Those dingoes, they sound like coyotes.
Yeah.
Funny, huh?
We're rich, baby.
That's just what I was thinking.
You, me, and Leo.
Maybe $1 million, huh?
Yeah, it could be.
Leo says it's a rich vein.
Over there sleeping. How can he sleep?
He's tired. He does most of the work.
I do my share, Rosie.
Well, you ought to do more.
More?
You're a big guy. Leo's small.
It's just hard luck.
Well, he's got a right to be tired.
Let him sleep. Okay by me.
Throw me a cigarette.
Here.
Thanks.
I keep thinking.
But how to spend your share?
Don't make sense.
What don't?
3-way split.
Made sense when we agreed.
Yeah, I know.
The agreement stands.
You and Leo 2/3, me 1/3.
That's right.
That ain't fair.
That's the way it is, Snowy.
We ought to figure a better way.
The agreement stands. I put up the money to pay expenses. Leo and you did the rest. That makes it a 3-way partnership.
You and Leo hog 2/3 between you. You're his wife.
Look, be happy with what you'll get.
You know?
Yes, I know.
Me and you.
I know what you've had in your mind for a long time.
Why not?
You're not my type, Snowy.
And he is?
That's why I married him.
That lousy little shrimp.
I wouldn't say that if I were you.
Why? You might get mad?
No, I might. You heard me.
Sure, baby, I heard you.
Leo's not a big guy, but he's a man.
Going to sleep? Leaving you with me?
Why don't you go to sleep, too? Maybe I could, then.
I'm not tired. A day's work don't knock me out.
Try doing a day's work tomorrow, and then we'll find out.
You're beautiful, Rosie.
What?
I said you're beautiful.
I will be when I get back home, start living it up.
Like you are now, in a man's shirt and slacks, your red hair shining in the moonlight. You're a real beauty, Rosie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, Snowy.
How about it, baby?
Listen, get your filthy hands off of me.
Oh, a kiss, just a little kiss. What's wrong with that?
Maybe you understand that.
I understand, baby.
Well, that's fine.
But you shouldn't have done that, Rosie.
I'll do more than that if you ever touch me again.
Like what?
You know why I wear this gun?
Snakes, wild dogs.
No, you. I'll keep that in mind. I feel safer when I'm awake.
Yeah, you don't know what it means.
What?
Always being with you.
It gets monotonous, I'd say.
Seeing you with him.
Oh, look, why don't you sleep it off?
All these weeks, me getting ideas, thinking you had the same ideas.
I never gave you any ideas.
Sometimes, the way you looked at me.
You must have imagined it.
Yeah.
Now, just forget about it.
No dice, huh, Rosie?
No dice.
Not any time?
Never.
Just you and him, huh?
Just me and Leo, and 2/3 of all this gold.
Only it can't work out that way.
What?
Come here, baby. Give me that gun. All right, Rosie. Okay, sweetheart, now we'll see.
Leo?
Shut up.
What are you going to do?
First, take care of Leo.
Oh, Leo! Leo! Honey! Oh, baby.
Little guy no more.
He's dead, Leo's dead. You killed him.
No three-way split, Rosie, just me.
He's dead. My Leo's dead.
I'll teach you.
Oh, Leo, honey.
Get away from him.
Leo!
Get up,
Leo.
Get away from him.
Don't touch me, don't touch me.
I'll touch you, baby.
You killed, don't you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
You killed him.
That's okay, never knew what happened. Okay, enough of the waterworks.
Let go of me.
It's been building up, baby.
Let me go.
It's been building up all these weeks.
Leo, honey.
I kept saying if Rosie gets to like me, okay. She can give Leo the brush. But you didn't like me, Rosie.
He's lying there so quiet, he'll never talk to me again. He'll never talk to me again.
It's the way it's got to be, Rosie. Nobody else can have you. Just me, nobody else. You hear me, baby? Just me, Rosie. Just me now.
They say you get used to anything. After a while, it looked like Rosie had gotten accustomed to the idea her husband was dead. She stopped crying, and after Leo had been buried in the sand, she smoked a cigarette. Snowy watched her very cautiously. He made sure she didn't have her hands on a gun. He wasn't sure what to do about her. She had loved her Leo, and she hated him. There's a law against murder down in Australia, and Rosie could accuse him of that crime and bring the police to the grave where Leo was buried. Snowy didn't like the picture of that situation, so he watched Rosie very carefully, wondered what was going on in her mind.
That lousy dingoes, why don't they shut up?
What?
This desert. It's time we got out of it.
I've been thinking.
Yeah?
No use crying over spilled milk?
No, that's right, baby.
Leo's a nice guy, sweet guy.
Yeah, sure.
But maybe you wouldn't have fitted in with things.
Now you're talking, Rosie.
Well, you know what I mean, like New York and Paris and London and all them places.
Yeah.
Leo wanted a ranch. Me, I've seen all the ranches I want to see.
Oh, baby, I like what you're saying.
We can say he just died in the desert.
Sure we can.
And that's what we'll say.
Poor Leo, yeah. He died out in the desert.
I'm young. Can't spend my life moping.
And we got $1 million to spend, Rosie, you and me.
Want to pour me some coffee?
Anything you want, baby. Anything.
Me in a mink coat.
I can see in one, Rosie.
I'll spend $10,000 on one.
Here, drink your coffee.
Thanks.
All the time, Rosie. All the time we'll be dolled up. You and your mink coats, me in my tailored suits, living it up. Ritz-Carlton and all them joints.
Doesn't seem possible we got all that gold. What do we do with it?
Yeah, in the morning I'll fill another couple of sacks. We'll take back all we can, then register the claim. After that, I don't know. Maybe we work the mine, maybe we sell it.
Sell it? I want to start living.
Yeah, we sell.
You go down and get more gold first thing in the morning, then we get out of here.
Sure.
What's the matter, Snowy?
It's okay, baby. You're not fighting me anymore.
Who wants to fight all the time?
Guy goes crazy, Rosie, know what I mean?
Stop talking about it.
Yeah, only I want that you understand.
I do.
It was crazy to bring you along. Gave me a chance to fall in love with you, baby.
I know.
I'll be good to you, Rosie. I'll make you happy. Nothing will be too good for you.
Just so long as you don't get sickening. I can't stand a guy who gets sickening.
I mean, I'll take good care of you.
See, you do, huh?
What'll it be, baby? We get married, huh? I'd want to marry. I'm that kind of a guy.
You work fast, don't you? Never met a guy who works so fast.
I'm nuts about you, Rosie.
Hey, wait a minute. You're hurting me. Don't hold me so tight. I want to go on breathing.
Yeah. I didn't mean to hurt you.
You're a rough guy, Snowy. You're awful rough with a girl. Do you know that?
Maybe it's the way you like a guy to be, huh? Now, Rosie. Now, baby.
Here, gold nuggets.
What's the matter, baby?
I was just wondering.
Wondering what?
What we're going to do with all this gold.
We're going back with it.
What makes you think so?
What do you mean?
What makes you think we're going anywhere?
Hey, wait a minute.
We're staying.
You want to stay okay. Me, I'm going back.
But you're not.
What is this?
How are you going to drive that Jeep without any gas in it?
Gas? We got plenty of gas.
It's gone.
What?
It's gone.
What are you talking about?
I emptied the cans. I spread the gasoline across the ground. It's all gone, evaporated.
You did what?
I just told you, Snowy. Finish on the gasoline.
You threw it away?
Yeah. We're staying here with Leo. You and me with Leo and all this gold.
I get it now.
Now it's too late.
Pretending you'd forgotten, Leo. Pretending you like me just so I let down my guard.
Leo was my guy and I was crazy about
it. I'll kill you.
You do anything you like.
I'll break in small pieces.
You kill me. Do anything you like. I don't care anymore, but you're going to stay here alone. Oh!
I'll teach you.
And I'll teach you, mister.
Shut up. Makes a monkey out of me. Makes me trust her. My back's turned. She throws away the gasoline. I'll show you. You too, baby.
I was just looking at the stream. It's awful dry. Leo said it would dry up altogether in a few days and no more water till the spring rains.
You figure to stay here, huh?
Till the end of time. For you and for me, like it was for Leo.
I don't get one thing.
For instance?
While I was away, you could have taken the Jeep and driven off. You could have left me here to starve and die.
I thought of that.
I bet you did.
Only I knew I couldn't make it alone.
You'd lose your way, huh?
Yeah.
You could have got back there and registered the claim.
I thought of that, too.
Why'd you do this, baby?
Impulse. I thought of Leo and I had to do something, anything at all, so I got rid of the gasoline.
Just like a crazy dame, huh? Okay, you want to stay here, you stay. Me, I go.
What?
It's not all desert. There's mountain country, bushlands. And there's fresh water 20 miles from here. We filled up there on the way here, remember?
You'll never make it, not walking.
$1 million in gold is waiting to be spent. And you think I won't make 50 miles across this country?
You think you can?
Do I think? I know.
Without me?
Solo, just me. I wouldn't trust a dame like you no more. You spoil it for yourself, Rosie. So you stay here with Leo. Why don't I kill you? Nah. I wouldn't shoot a dame. I don't have to. How long will you last out here all alone? A few days, a week? Then curtains. You'll go nuts, baby. You'll run out there in the desert. Get ideas about making it alone, and that'll be the end. Too bad, Rosie. Too bad. Enough water to see me 20 miles. That's all I need. I'm on my way, Rosie. Have fun here. Have real fun.
$1 million in gold can do that to a guy. Old-timers who had crossed that desert had used mules and burros, same as they did in this country. Nobody, as far as I know, had ever made 500 miles of desert on foot. But Snowy had that in mind when he set out. On the other hand, maybe it made some sense. If he stayed in that camp, he had to die anyhow, just like Rosie would die. She watched him walk away into the desert, into the blinding glare of the sun. Then she picked up a couple of sharp rocks and put one in each of her pockets. When Snowy glanced back, he saw her following him, her hands in the pockets of her slacks. He grinned back at her.
Go back, baby.
I told you once, Snowy, you're not going anywhere.
Go on back, Rosie. You can't keep up with me.
You're not leaving. You don't seem to understand.
I'm on my way. Too bad it had to be this way, Rosie.
If you look over that way, you'll see what I mean.
Where? I don't see anything.
Keep looking. You'll see what I mean.
I don't see anything. Oh!
The girl girl couldn't afford to miss, and she didn't. She found her target twice. The rock struck Snowy's face. He staggered, his face covered with blood. In a split second, the girl sprang at him. She kicked him in the stomach, and the man sprawled on the ground, groaning. It took Rosie just 2 more seconds to lug the man's gun from its holster.
Whenever you're ready, you can get up. You'll live for a while, anyway.
Oh, lousy days. You can't trust him.
Not this one, you can't.
I'm sick.
My heart bleeds for you.
You shouldn't have done this, Rosie.
I'm walking back to camp, and I'm taking your water back with me. You please yourself what you do.
Yeah, my face, you cut it.
We're in trouble. You want to take a look at some real trouble?
Dingo pack.
I didn't see him come this way.
Lousy dingoes. Standing there looking at us.
They're going to do more than look at us.
Give me that gun.
You stay where you are.
These dogs will attack any minute.
Maybe.
More like a bunch of wolves, just like wolves.
I'm going to try and shoot that one, see what happens.
Look out!
I kill one. Seems scared.
Give me that rod.
I'll take care of it.
They won't go away.
As long as they don't attack.
Come on, we'll get back to camp.
You walk in front of me.
Look.
I said walk in front of me. I got to watch you, too.
We're in a jam.
You better walk slowly.
Your Australian dingo is no former domestic pooch gone wild. He's a ferocious killer from way back. He looks like a wolf and acts like one. He usually runs with a pack. A pack will operate near a big sheep station or in the bushlands. It will seldom go into the desert. When it does, there's some good reason. It's probably following an expedition, hoping to attack the horses. In lean country, a dingo pack will attack anything or anyone. The pack that threatened Snowy and Rosie numbered about 20. And the animal Rosie had killed just wasn't enough to go around.
Hold up a minute, will you, Snowy? Stop, I said, or I'll shoot.
I ain't gonna stop. Come on. Hey. You would, wouldn't you? All right, come on.
Now get going. And I'm holding this gun on you, don't forget.
All right, come on,
next
come
time
on.
I won't miss.
Well, come on, come on. The
I'm coming, I'm coming.
Big dame with a gun in her hand. Yeah. Hot, ain't it?
Yeah, it's hot.
Well, come on, walk.
They look hungry.
Want some water?
No, thanks.
Come on, get it.
I'm saving it.
Go on, take a drink.
Oh, you thought you could fool me, huh?
Hey.
I'm warning you, Snowy. I'm a good shot, and you know it. And I just keep your hands off of me and keep your distance and start walking.
Lousy dame.
How much farther is it?
Come on, walk.
I'm walking.
Yeah. You can have some water.
No, I don't want any water. Get moving, get moving.
Go on. Take a drink.
I said I didn't want any water. Now, will you get going? I want to make it back to camp.
Come on, Rosie. Take one little drink. On me.
Listen, they're getting closer and closer.
Well, come on, walk. Come on, they're closing in. Will you pick it up? Come on, walk, 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 walk.
They attack in force.
They'll tear us to pieces.
All right, what'd you do with my gun and Leo's?
Put them in a jeep. I unloaded them.
Where are the bullets?
I got them.
Get the guns in.
Now you're making sense.
Walk to the jeep. I'll cover you.
Okay, watch them lousy dogs.
I'll watch.
I'll load both guns over here, Rosie.
Okay, don't waste time.
It gives you a different feeling when you got a gun in your hand, baby.
But it makes you feel like a man again.
Watch it later.
I am.
Bullseye, baby. Who taught you to shoot like that?
You watch them now. That's something I can't bear to look at.
They're hungry.
Maybe they'll go away.
They won't go far. They'll hang around.
Do we have to kill them all?
Every time they look like they're going to rush us, we kill one, maybe two. That'll hold them for a while.
We don't want to waste the bullets.
That big brown one.
Yeah, I see him.
He's not eating. He just stands there looking at us like he's trying to figure something out.
Maybe he's figuring they ought to rush us.
I can almost read what's going on in his mind.
What's he looking at now?
I don't see a thing.
Yeah, they're scared, all right.
Look.
Yeah, a dust cloud.
Somebody riding a horse.
Just one guy. One guy riding a horse scaring a dingo pack? Don't add up.
There's only one man coming.
Yeah, they must have heard the shooting. Yeah, that's it.
Whatever it is, I'm awful glad to see him.
Wait a minute.
All right, put those guns down now.
Now listen, baby.
No, you listen. They hang you for murder in this country, and you murdered my Leo. Now drop those guns before I drop you.
Guy has a horse. I could use that horse.
You heard what I said?
You won't shoot me, Rosie.
Don't make me prove it.
Yeah, those lousy dogs. If they hadn't come this way, there'd have been no shooting. And that guy wouldn't have heard the shots. Lousy dingoes. $1 million in gold. And you think you're going to see me turned over to the cops? I'll show you.
No, no. No, get away.
Okay, mister. I can take care of you, too.
Are you all right?
I'm okay.
My name's Steele, John Steele.
I'm Rosie Panning. You American?
Yeah. Let's take a look at this guy. Who is he?
He murdered my husband.
Yeah, he's alive.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
How'd you get here?
An expedition. We're camped in the hills. I heard shooting.
Some dingoes were here.
Yeah, I know. We killed about 30 of them. They finally left us. You'll be okay now.
He killed my Leo. He killed him. Leo never had a chance. He was asleep.
That'll be taken care of.
Help me. I need a doctor.
You'll get one, chum. My friends will be here in a few minutes.
I got $1 million in gold, pal. What do you think of that? Leo, I told him not to bring a dame.
Australia's a big land. It draws all kinds of people to it. A land of big opportunity always does draw all kinds of people. There's nothing American about it, and yet you feel a sort of kinship with the places and the people. You feel at home. Rosie never did come home again. She stayed out there where her Leo was buried. She sold the claim, and she's a rich gal in dollars or pounds. Maybe someday she will drift back to Oregon. Anyway, she's the only gal I ever ran across who struck $1 million gold mine, and I hope you liked hearing about it. What was I doing in the Gibson Desert when I met her? I'd been investigating the scene of what could be the dusty remains of an ancient civilization. But that's another story. I'll tell you about it sometime. Be around next week, huh? For a story that takes place in North Africa. The gal in this story is a cross between Elizabeth Taylor, the Queen of Iran, and Marilyn Monroe. She's my candidate for the most beautiful dame in the world. We had a lot of fun together. There were three of us. The gal, a guy named Cardew, and yours truly. It's a real adventure I like to call High Test. Heard with me on today's transcribed John Steele adventure were Mary Ashworth and Charlie Holmes. I'm Don Douglas. So until next week then, and High Test. Remember, adventure is where you find it, but don't look for it. It may find you.
John Steele, Adventurer, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from December 14th, 1952. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now we turn the clock back even further to a story penned by Mark Twain in 1883. It's Life on the Mississippi, adapted by the Cavalcade of America. A great story next from NBC from February 24th, 1953.
The DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Tonight's play is based on one of America's greatest classics, Life on the Mississippi. Tonight's star, Raymond Massey, who, as Mark Twain, talks of the days long before he became a well-known writer, of the days when he was young Sam Clemens.
When I was a boy, there was but one permanent ambition among my comrades in our village on the Mississippi. That was to be a steamboatman. And the grandest position of all was pilot. But it was not long before I discovered that to become a licensed pilot was about as simple as to become a bank president. I learned that before I could ever presume to steer a steamboat, I would have first to serve a term as an apprentice, a cub, they call it, to an experienced pilot. Also, I learned that Mr. Horace Bixby of the Paul Jones was one of the finest pilots on the river. I took myself up to the pilot house, opened the door, and walked in. That was a long time ago. I was only 19, but I remember it as though it was yesterday.
Sir. Sir.
Yeah? What is it?
Sir, would you like a young man for a cub to learn piloting?
I would not. Nor do I like passengers in my pilot house.
But, sir, I'd be...
And mind you, shut the door tight on your way out.
Yes, sir.
Now, this was scarcely an auspicious beginning. But I was stubborn, and I began to lay siege to Mr. Bixby. If I couldn't go in the pilot house, at least I could look in through the window. And at last, after 3 days of my relentless staring, he motioned me in.
Yes, Mr. Bixby?
Please, boy, will you take the evil eye off me? I don't want to take a cub. They're more trouble than they're worth.
But I wouldn't want much wages, sir.
Wages? You wouldn't want much wages. Are you out of your head? Why, you got to pay to be a cub.
Pay?
You mean you didn't know that?
No, sir, I didn't.
Why, a pilot wouldn't consider taking a cub for less than $500, cash in advance.
$500?
You better go home, son. Go home first and get yourself a job and earn some money. Or maybe your father will give it to you.
No, my father's dead, sir. He died 10 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's your name, son?
Sam Clemens, sir, from Hannibal.
Is your mother alive?
Yes, but she couldn't give me the money. I've been sending her...
Oh, no, son, I didn't mean that.
But, sir, I could pay you $100 now and the rest from my earnings after I'm a pilot. That is, if you'd...
All right,
but,
son.
But, sir, I could...
I said all right. I'll learn you piloting from New Orleans to St. Louis on the terms you propose.
But I don't understand.
I'm not so sure I do either. Just a minute. Anyway, you're going to be my cub.
So I became a pilot's cub. Then I entered upon the enterprise of learning my trade with the easy confidence of my time of life. It seemed to me that all a pilot had to do was to keep his boat in the river. And it didn't appear to me to be too much of a trick, the river being so wide. At least so I supposed as we headed upriver from New Orleans, Mr. Bixby at the wheel and I beside him. Now and then he called my attention to the passing landscape, and for a while I found it an agreeable enough way to pass the time.
And this now is 6 Mile Point.
That's all?
Now, this was pleasant enough information, but after I'd seen 9 Mile Point and 12 Mile Point and so on, I began to wish we might talk about history or even taxidermy. But no.
You see, the slack water ends here abreast this clump of china tree. So, we cross to the other side.
So, we crossed. Seems simple enough. But later that night, on our second watch, I was to have something of a disillusionment.
Now, what's the first point above New Orleans?
The first point? Golly, I don't know.
You don't know? Well, you're a smart one. What's the name of the next point?
Why, I don't know, sir.
Well, this beats anything. Look here. What do you start out from above 12 Mile Point to cross over?
I don't know, sir.
You don't. Well, what do you know?
Well, Well, nothing, I guess, for certain.
By the great Caesar's ghost, I believe you. You're the stupidest dunderhead I ever saw or heard of, so help me, Moses. The idea of you being a pilot. You. Why, you don't know enough to pilot a cow down a lane.
But his wrath was up. He shuffled one side of his wheel to the other as if the floor was hot. He would boil a while to himself and then overflow and scald me again.
Look here. What do you suppose I told you the name of those points for?
Well, to be entertaining, I thought.
Such an eruption followed as I never had heard nor ever wished to hear again. But after about 20 minutes, he was finally empty. And presently he said to me in the gentlest way,
"My boy, you must get a little memorandum book, and every time I tell you a thing, put it down right away."
"Yes, sir."
"There's only one way to be a pilot, and that's to get this entire river by heart. Why, you have to know it just like your ABCs."
Now, this was a dismal revelation. But I got a notebook, and by the time we reached St. Louis, it fairly bristled with the names of towns and points, bays, islands, bends. But it was all in the notebook, and not in my head.
Boy, you remember Walnut Bend?
Oh, yes, sir.
What's the shape of it?
The shape? Why, it just bends. It doesn't have any particular shape.
No shape? Why, every foot of river's got a shape. And you got to know it by heart. How else are you going to steer on a pitch-black night?
A pitch-black night?
See here. But have you ever come home late and gone down the hall without a light?
Well, yes, sir, but I...
How did you follow your hall then? You couldn't see it, but you knew the shape of it.
You mean I've got to know all the millions of variations of shape in the banks of this interminable river just as well as I know the shape of our front hall at home?
Why, better. Much better.
Well, then, Mr. Bixby, if it's all the same to you, I'm going to retire from this business. I haven't got brains to be a pilot, and if I had, I wouldn't have strength enough to carry him around except on crutches.
Now, drop that. When I say I'll learn a man the river, I mean it. And you can depend on it, I'll learn him or I'll kill him.
Well, there was no use arguing with a person like this. Slowly, I began to learn the bends and the snags and the bars and the river shape day and night. And I even remembered the depth sounding the leadsman called out to us from the bow when we were in shallow water. And with all this knowledge, I suppose I got full of false confidence and falser courage. At least, Mr. Bixby thought so. I remember it was on a matchless summer's day, and I was at the wheel, bowling down the bend above Island 66, brim full of self-conceit and carrying my nose as high as a giraffe, when Mr. Bixby said,
"Well, I'm going below. I suppose you know the next crossing."
This was almost an affront. It was about the simplest crossing in the whole river, and bottomless besides.
Know it? I can run it with my eyes shut.
How deep is it?
Oh, I couldn't get bottom there with a church steeple.
You, think so, do you?
The very tone of his question shook my confidence. He left without another word, and I began to imagine all kinds of things. Presently, the captain stepped out on the hurricane deck. Next, the chief mate appeared, and then a clerk. Pretty soon, there were 20 people down there under my nose, muttering to each other and glancing up at me, worried. Finally, the captain said,
"Sam, where's Mr. Bixby?"
Gone below, sir.
Gone below? On this crossing?
That did it for me. All at once, I imagined I saw shallow water ahead, and every remnant of my confidence in that crossing vanished. I grabbed the bell rope to signal for the lead, and then I dropped it, ashamed, and then seized it again and pulled it so feebly I could hardly hear the stroke myself, but the captain did.
"Can't you hear down there? Starboard lead! And quick about it before we go aground!"
This was all the confirmation my fears needed. I began to climb the wheel like a squirrel. Then came the leadsman's sepulchral cry.
And a quarter twain.
Quarter twain in a bottomless crossing.
And a quarter twain.
We were going to ground.
Our twain.
Quickly, I grabbed the bell rope and stopped the engine.
Quarter twain.
We were drifting to disaster, and I did not know what in the world to do. I could have hung my hat on my eyes. They stuck out so far.
9.5.
And we were drawing 9 feet. In a last desperate effort to save the ship, I flew to the speaking tube and shouted down to the engineers.
Oh, Ben, if you love me, back her. Quick, Ben, or back the immortal soul out of her.
Then I heard the pilot house door close, and I turned. And there stood Mr. Bixby, smiling a bland, sweet smile. And then from the audience below came a humiliating thunder gust of laughter. I saw it all now. They played a trick on me, and everybody was in on it.
Sam, didn't you know there was no bottom in that crossing?
Yes, sir, I did.
Then you shouldn't have let me, or the captain, or the leadsman, or anyone shake your confidence in that knowledge. Understand?
Yes, sir.
It was a good enough lesson, but pretty hardly learned. And for months I had to hear a phrase which I came to conceive a particular dislike for. It was, "Oh, Ben, if you love me, back her." But despite his impatience and his constant badgering and his low-down dirty tricks, or perhaps even because of them, for there was no meanness in the man, I came to have a deep respect for Mr. Bixby. Perhaps it was not having a father of my own. And it was a black day for me when he left the work on the Missouri for a spell, and we said goodbye on the St. Louis landing.
Sam, I've arranged for you to go with Mr. Brown. Not too easy a man, but a fine pilot. You'll get along.
Yes, sir.
Well, behave yourself now and, goodbye, son.
Yes, sir. Please tell me the truth. Will I ever make a pilot? A good pilot?
Why, come to think of it, boy, yes, I believe you will.
And he walked away. Thinking back now, I think those were the grandest words these ears have ever heard. I was happy then, thinking the worst was behind me. It never occurred to me that it was still ahead.
Listening to the DuPont Cavalcade of America, starring Raymond Massey. And now, Bill Hamilton, speaking for the DuPont Company.
Selecting a career is always a big decision for a high school graduate. There are many things he wants to know and should know about any career he is considering. For high school students who ask, "Shall I study chemistry?" The American Chemical Society has published a helpful booklet. It tells what chemists do, what it takes to be a success. Ask for the booklet, "Shall I study chemistry?" In answer to this question, DuPont hopes an increasing number of students will answer yes. DuPont depends upon today's chemistry students to help in bringing you tomorrow's better things for better living through chemistry.
Now, we return to our cavalcade story, Life on the Mississippi, starring Raymond Massey as Mark Twain. Determined to become a Mississippi River pilot, young Sam Clemens has been serving as a cub to Mr. Bixby. But with Bixby away on the Missouri, Sam has been put with another pilot,
Now Mark Twain continues his story.
So shortly, I went aboard the steamer Pennsylvania, fine big new ship. In the pilot house, I met the gentleman I was to serve under. He was quite a come down after Mr. Bixby. His name was Mr. Brown, and he was a middle-aged, long, slim, bony, smooth-shaven, horse-faced, ignorant, stingy, malicious, snarling, fault-hunting, moat-magnifying tyrant.
You're Horace Bixby's cub, eh? What's your name?
Sam Clemens, sir.
Sam Clemens, eh? Sam Clemens. Where are you from, Sam Clemens?
Hannibal.
Darn said better you'd stayed there. Where are you going to stand there all day?
But I've had no orders, sir.
You've had no orders? My, what a fine bird we are. Well, here. Take that ice pitcher down and fill her up. Be quick about it.
Yes, sir.
So I did at a dead run, and the moment I got back...
What are you doing down there all this time? Here, fill up the stove. Now, down that shovel. Turn this numbskull aerosol.
So it went. Watch after watch for months. No matter what I did, it was certain to be wrong, and Mr. Brown would spit out his venom on me. My only consolation aboard the Pennsylvania was having my younger brother, Henry, along. I'd gotten him on as third clerk. Henry was a handsome, bright, gentle, well-liked boy. I was proud to be his brother. And at night when I was off duty, we'd sit out on deck under the stars and listen to the songs of the river.
Sam?
Huh?
I've been meaning to ask you. You giving up your idea of being a writer? You know, I liked those little squibs and sketches you used to write. Truly I did.
Why, thanks, Henry, but no. I'm going to be a pilot.
But maybe you got a talent, Sam. Maybe it's wrong to waste it.
Yeah, you going to sit there all night? Time to go and watch that dunderhead. Come on now.
Someday, Henry, something's going to happen between Mr. Brown and me. Yes, sir, something's going to happen.
Something did happen about three trips later. I was alongside Mr. Brown in the pilot house, and Henry came out on a hurricane deck just below us.
Mr. Brown, sir, the captain wants you to stop at Pearson's Landing.
Now, Mr. Brown gave no intimation that he'd heard, but that was his way. He was a little deaf, and maybe he hadn't. Or maybe he had. Anyway, I kept still, and presently we were sailing past this landing, and the captain hurried out on deck.
Let her come around, sir. Let her come around. Didn't Henry tell you to land here?
No, sir, he did not.
He didn't. Sam, did you hear him?
Yes, sir, I did.
Shut your mouth. Never heard anything of the kind.
I closed my mouth as per instructions. And an hour later, Henry came into the pilot house, unaware of what had happened.
Here, you. Why didn't you tell me we'd got to land?
Well, I did tell you, Mr. Brown.
That's a lie.
You lie yourself. He did tell you.
For a long moment, Mr. Brown was speechless. Then his face got red as fire, and every muscle in it was working.
I'll tender you in half a minute. Henry, get out of my pilot house. Get out!
Henry obeyed and started out, when Brown, with a sudden access to fury, picked up a 5-pound lump of coal and started after him. Before I could think, I was between them, my fists flying.
Here now, you get away from me. Boy, get your hands up.
You've been asking for it, Mr. Brown. For by golly, you're going to
get it. Boy, Sam, attaboy. You got it. She knocked him down.
Let me up. Why, you...
Sam, the captain. The captain's coming. Let him up.
Oh, my gosh.
What's going on here?
Captain, I want this boy put ashore. The minute we touch New Orleans, or I'll never turn a wheel again on this boat. Did you hear?
Sam, follow me.
I followed without a word. He led the way to his pilot. We went in. He shut the door and sat down. I stood before him.
Sam, this is a very serious matter.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware that this boat was plowing downriver with no one at the wheel?
Yes, sir.
Did you strike him first?
Yes, sir.
Did you knock him down?
He fell, sir.
Did you do anything further?
I pounded him, sir.
Mm-hmm. Did you pound him much? That is, severely.
One might call it that, sir, maybe.
I'm deuced glad of it.
Huh?
Now, mind you, don't ever do it again on this boat. But lay for him ashore. Give him a good sound thrashing, do you hear?
Yes, sir.
Now, you think you're ready to stand watch by yourself? If you are, Brown can lead the ship.
Well, sir, No, I don't think I am ready. Not yet.
I'm sorry. You'll have to leave us then. For New Orleans. But I'll arrange passage to St. Louis, and I'll see that you get another pilot to work under.
Thank you, sir.
Now, clear out with you. Not a word of this to anybody. You've been guilty of a great crime, you whelp. But remember now, lay for him ashore.
So I left the Pennsylvania at New Orleans. Henry was staying aboard. So while the cotton heavers loaded the cargo, we sat on a freight pile at the waterfront and said goodbye.
Roll up, hear that cotton roll up, hear
that cotton. I'm truly sorry, Sam, that you lost your post.
Oh.
But maybe it's for the best. Maybe you'll go back to your writing now.
Now, drop that, will you?
But you've got a talent, Sam. Why, even Mr. Bixby says so.
Bixby? Bixby
Sam,
never...
Sam, there was a fellow on the boat just down from the Missouri. And, well, Sam, didn't you say to Bixby once something like, I haven't got brains to be a pilot, and if I had, I wouldn't have strength enough to carry him around, except on crutches. Didn't you, Sam?
Well, Bixby remembered that.
This fella heard it from Bixby. Seems like Bixby's always kind of bragging about you and the way you have for putting things. And all you do, Sam, and you ought to do
now,
something.
Now, drop that, I said, Henry. I'm going to be a pilot, and that's that.
Well, you say, Sam. As you say.
Henry boarded the Pennsylvania, and she started north the next morning. The day after, I boarded another ship for St. Louis. A couple of days out, we touched at Greenville, Mississippi. Somebody on shore was shouting.
You hear the news? The Pennsylvania blew up at Ship Island. 150 lives lost.
That was all they knew, except that the survivors had been taken to Memphis. And there, 2 days later, I arrived and found my brother Henry in the hospital. His hurts past help. And soon, while I sat beside him, he died. Henry Clemens, age 19. He who never had harmed a living soul. In due course, I got my license. I was a pilot now, full-fledged. I was a satisfactory pilot, I think. But by and by, the Civil War came along, and overnight, my occupation was gone. Soon, I became a silver miner in Nevada, and then followed an entire procession of occupation. Now, I am a scribbler of books, and it is 20 years since I last looked from the windows of a pilot house. But often now, I steal away in my mind and return to my beloved river. It is night, with only a sprinkling of stars to light our way. I stand at the wheel, guiding the vessel, mindful of the passengers who lie asleep below like trusting children. Sometimes in my memory, my brother stands at my side. Oh, Henry, how I've missed you all these years. Under me, the engine mumbles softly. Behind me, the paddles are endlessly dipping into the muddy water. And then, faintly comes the lonely whistle of a steamboat far upstream. It is thus, in these busy, hectic days, that I return in memory to the life I loved, to the life that nevermore will be, to life on the Mississippi.
Our thanks to Raymond Massey and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's true story. Tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was written by Warner Law and was adapted from the story Life on the Mississippi by the late Samuel L. Clemens, Mark Twain, published by Harper & Brothers. Original music was composed by Arden Cornwell, conducted by Donald Vorey. The program was directed by John Zoller. With our star Raymond Massey, you heard Jeffrey Bryant as young Sam Clemens and Charles Dingle as Bixby. This is Cy Harris reminding you to be with us next week when the DuPont Cavalcade will present Star and Shield, a delightful story of a New Jersey policeman and a little five-year-old girl who won his heart. Our star, Broderick Crawford, and featuring a five-year-old actress, Eileen Mary. Be sure to listen.
The DuPont Cavalcade of America came to you from the Velasco Theater in New York City and is sponsored by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry.
The Cavalcade of America, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 24th, 1953, on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.